12?
It's just after I see a movie, I like to go get a piece of pie and talk about it. It's sort of a little tradition I have. Do you like to get pie after you see a good movie?
Hello, and welcome to another movie podcast. My name is Oscar, and with me today is...
Yes, I am with him today. Ralph.
You make it sound like you just rushed to the mic, like you were like in the bathroom.
That's what I was trying to go for.
But you weren't. You were just sitting
there. That was the whole time I was sitting here.
Okay. You still are sitting there.
Yeah.
Interesting. This is episode number 73, and what we typically do on this show is that we review three movies, usually new ones.
And typically we do, but I also like to annoy you.
We are 1 minute in, not even a minute in. And
have I been doing a good job?
At being annoying, yes.
Yes.
Oh. Then yes.
There you go. My job is done.
You're succeeding.
I guess that's the end of this episode.
I hate family sometimes. As I was saying, what we typically do is review three fucking movies, usually about fucking. And what we also do is usually two new releases and one marathon pick. We'll describe what that is later. We also have a little other extras that we do here and there. But you can find us at our website at otherpodcast.com, as well as any podcast catcher of your choice, which you're listening on probably. Actually, you know what, Rob? We get a lot of listeners that listen through the website on their computer.
Really?
We get a lot of that.
Yeah.
More than I thought. I've never done it in my life, but it's more of a common thing for people, I guess.
You know, I have a problem. A lot of Android users tell me, well, how do I get your podcast? And I go, I think Google now has a podcast app that you can get it on there. And I tell them that, and then they're like, yeah, I don't know what you're talking about. And I was like, oh, okay, well, I can't help you. Because I don't know anything about it. I just tell people, I can recommend them the app I use, but that's a dollar. And to tell people to put
buy a dollar in,
they barely listen to the show that are my friends, as is, and it's free.
Yeah.
Right.
We do have some people that we do know that listen to our show regularly.
Yeah,
or at least semi. Anywho has what's its. The website that I was just teasing there a little bit, it's otherpodcast.com.
You already said it.
Is where we have, we'll say it again. You know, I say it multiple times. That's how marketing works, Ralph. That's where we can find all the other shows we've done, as well as bonus episodes, which are a thing we do, a little extra thing that we do. Obviously, that's the title. Where every month, Ralph and I, mainly me, choose a movie and record
an extra episode. Movies.
Yeah, choose an extra episode and vote for those who donate to our show, any amount, of course. Get that episode that month as an extra on top of the regular schedule programming. And for those who don't, which is most of you, because nobody wants to cough up any money, which like me included, by the way, I understand. I don't donate to any show either. One show I do. Anyway, and they'll get it 5 months later. So the one that came out this month, the one that's coming out today, this month, 5 months ago, that we recorded a while ago.
Halloween.
Is, we're technically in March still. So that one is still Bad Times at the El Royale. But since it's coming out right at the beginning of April, I'm just going to say Overlord is for the actual month that's coming up. So it's Overlord.
I like that movie.
Yeah, we both enjoyed that movie.
More than I thought I would, because that was a horrible...
Premise?
No, the premise was cool.
Trailer?
Yeah, trailer was just like... Oof.
I mean, the trailer didn't win me over, but it didn't like lose me either. So
I just felt like, it's been done.
Yeah. Oh, I'm sure, yeah. Every movie's been done, Ralph. So the bonus episode you can get if you donate to our show for March, since you have your cutoff time is like a day when this releases, is Captain Marvel. So join in on that quickly if you can. If not, April's bonus episode is going to be Hellboy, the new one.
The remake.
I don't even know if it's considered to be a remake because it's more directly to the comic book. I don't know what's going on. Because you know, they do that shit. You know, they're like, it's adapted from the, not a remake. It's adapting from the comic book.
Yeah, they figured Spider-Man did it 6 times. We can do it 1 more time.
Right. So, but it looks interesting, right? It doesn't look bad.
I don't know.
I haven't seen a trailer yet, but from what I read
about
it. So
how does it look interesting if you don't see a trailer?
I meant in the way what I read. Information I know.
Okay. It's
an expression pitch.
Seems.
Anyway. My God, you're just like me so many times. So, that's what's going on with that. Also, what we do is marathons. We're going to talk a little bit about that. We've decided on a marathon, finally.
Oscar kind of decided and forced it on me.
I didn't force it on you.
You might as well have.
Nope.
But it was... Okay, you're going to let me speak?
Nope. How does it feel? No one can see your shrug. This is
Bad radio?
An audible medium, yes.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, when I can't speak.
Yeah.
That's what happens.
Yeah.
Anyways. Yeah, so he kind of forced it on me. But I liked it enough. Oh, look, he didn't interrupt. But I liked it enough to actually say yes to it. So, well, that wasn't loud at all. So, yeah, the marathon we chose was suburban life or suburbia versus city life. Or
well, you kind of, based on one of the movies I know you're picking for marathon, today's movie,
yeah,
is that it's not really suburban for you. It's also town. So, like, small life.
Yeah, but, you know, and this is where my interpretation of suburban is going to come in for you. And it's more like suburban style or suburban lifestyle. So a small town is very also kind of suburban lifestyle as well. But
yeah,
it has the white picket fence. It has what we think should be. And I still find white it, especially the movie the movie I chose.
Yeah.
It's a small enough town where they live still on the outskirts of that town, almost like in the suburbs of that town. That's okay. Where he's from. His, you know, that's what you get what I'm saying?
Okay.
That's where, I guess that's where I still take it.
Well, obviously, I didn't have a big enough trouble for it because I let you
do it. Let's be realistic. The fact that this is this movie, I'm sure you weren't going to have any troubles.
No, no, not because of this movie. I don't know what your other ones are, but I've allowed it. If I allow this one, I got
the other movie. the other movies I'm going to be a little bit more stricter on. Wow. Yeah,
you just have like windshield wipers everywhere.
Well, I have two.
Yeah, that's everywhere, and that's many of them.
And they're not in a car.
Right, they're not in a car. Where are they? Anyway, continue.
Obviously right next to you.
No one finds you amusing. Continue.
You just left.
That's my own joke.
So I guess what I want my stuff to say is, suburban-wise, is not everything. It's about like what that life offers for you. What people want to do in suburbia, I mm-hmm. suppose. Besides leave it, I feel like people are always.
You mean leave the cities?
This is a mix.
Oh, leave their own place.
I always think people from suburban life are always want to make it to the city. From at least movies I've seen, right? Mm. Always want to make it big and leave their either small town or leave their mm-hmm. suburban life or whatever. But at the same time, love it because that's where they got there to begin with. It was weird, like. You have both dynamics.
There's a lot of mixed matches you could find.
Yeah.
Even in real life, you see a lot of those kind of people.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, I mean, and you can tell if you were to speak to a person who lived in a small town, grew up in it, or lives in it now, and compare it to a person who lives or has grown up in suburban, meaning outskirts of the city kind of town, or county, whatever the fuck they're called. They would say they have very different lives. And of course they would, because the city's right there. Different kind of things happen, but ultimately the same. And the whole point is that they're not city, which is to my half of the marathon. We've each are going to choose four titles, so that's eight. And I'm going to choose four city-centered or anything about city. And that doesn't have to be like the movie has to be about the city. Like, not like that. It's more like think of Do the Right Thing, for example, the way that movie portrays New York City in that hot day.
Yes, yeah, yeah.
That leads to the events of that awesome movie. Obviously, right. It's about the characters, it's about race, right. It's about a lot of other things. But the movie does not work without New York, you know? Or you think of Widows. That movie does not work without Chicago. You know, the way, and the movie implements Chicago to tell the story of these women taking money from whatever it was. So that's what we're doing. And it could be anything we want. The interpretation I left kind of wide open. And I love your first choice, of course, which is going to be Blue Velvet.
Yes.
I haven't really... Did I mention the movies? Yeah, I didn't mention it earlier. Blue Velvet's a perfect choice. It's like the quintessential small-town horror movie in a way.
Yeah, that's kind of why I picked it. I picked it because it's...
Or thriller.
These guys are living the suburban life. This, mm-hmm. this our main character is. Mm-hmm. Well, he's kind of out of it, but his parents live it. He's just coming back from college. And they kind of live the suburban life. So I thought it would be cool... To see this, like, not everything is hunky dory in your suburban life.
Yeah.
So that's what I thought. That's what I thought it would be.
So cool. Did you try to go with something specific in your searches, or did you wait till something jumped out at you, or were you looking for like the horror underbelly of town life or something?
No. I'm gonna try to do. There's two going to be from my city.
Mm-hmm.
My suburban cities. So my city, all the suburbs surrounding it, right?
Okay, nice.
So there's gonna be two choices of that. Specific. Yeah, I didn't go specific.
I said it.
And I wanted to pick as I wanted to pick all of them, but at the same time, I wanted some dark movies in there. So the other choice is I'm gonna have a mix of happy life, or happy stuff going on is just like, you know, everything is kind of hunky dory, and then the other half is gonna be the complete opposite.
Yeah.
So two will be complete opposite, as in like kind of dark side.
Nice.
Which one or the other one might be horror? This is
a thriller.
It's like a thriller.
It's like a thriller. Yeah, Blue Velvet.
It's not set in the stone. I'm looking at Fright Night. Might be that. We'll see.
Cool.
Original, not remake.
Right. I think that goes without saying.
You already, yeah.
I knew that.
Yeah.
But maybe listeners didn't know.
And then for sure, the one city one that I'll spoil right now is Wayne's World.
You told me that earlier. I saw it on your Amazon wish list.
Well, I already saw it.
Watch list. So I saw it on there, like, oh, he's going to choose this one.
Yeah.
Because I was watching Blue Velvet.
So, and that's based out of Aurora, Illinois, which is a suburb of Chicago. And it's funny because that's like the opening of the movie. He's like, yes. I live in Aurora, Illinois, just a suburb of Chicago. I was like, hey, you just made my movie for me.
You just made my pick. Easy choice.
Right, exactly.
Much like myself, is that I didn't go for something specific. I went with two very personal picks. Personal to the filmmaker, to why they chose that city. I did choose a Spike Lee movie because he's so in love with New York.
I mean, he really is.
I mean, I was thinking Woody Allen too.
The thing is, you could literally pick just four movies about New York,
right?
And they'd all
Scorsese has made great New York.
Obviously, and they'd all be great.
Yeah, and that's the thing, New York. I made a list of New York, my New York short list, Ralph, of movies. These are the ones that did not make it.
Uh-huh.
Is Midnight Cowboy, Spider-Man 2,
okay.
Miss 45, Brooklyn, Do the Right Thing, Taxi Driver, Ghost Dog, In America, and The Professional.
Wow,
those are like. Wow. Really good. Well, in my opinion, really good New York movies. Movies set in New York. And there's a lot of them. There's a lot of great thriller movies about city life and that becomes it. Like Zodiac, for example, or The Dark Knight, which is a nameless city. I find a lot of nameless city movies. Like Seven didn't make my list either. The Matrix, Cosmopolis.
Yeah.
Anyway.
See, I have for mine is a short list right now. I'll give you the five possible.
Mm-hmm.
I got Pleasantville, Back to the Future. Suburb of his town, just letting you know right now.
Okay, all right, sure.
Brick, Clerks, and Ferris Bueller's Day Off.
Brick, that's a good one.
Yeah. But right now, a lot of these movies I've seen already.
Well, yeah, that's kind of how it works.
It's kind of more than likely.
Oh, yeah, I wanted to
The
pick
only movie
I've
I
seen.
Have not seen,
yeah.
Technically, and I'm going to count it as a half-seen, half-hasn't, I haven't seen it since high school. It's just Blue Velvet.
And oh, wow.
So I remember the movie was I was watching it, right?
I probably should have too.
No. That is how I watched it. But I did not interpret this movie the first time I saw this movie, I didn't like it.
No one likes this movie.
Well, I mean.
No, not like that. I mean, at that
age. Yeah. Well, I just couldn't comprehend it.
Yeah.
To be brutally honest with you. I watched this now and I'll go, oh, okay.
Yeah.
Like, it's literally like, oh, okay. Like oh, he's just, okay. Just a little crazy.
Just a little nutty.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then it just, that's literally what, that was great.
Yeah.
So I've been rewatching movies on my list until I've already watched. Three, and there's a big list. There's a 15 more movies.
Yeah,
but I watched three, and I was just like, yeah, no, two fell too short.
Yeah,
sorry.
I hear you. Yeah, mine's are so. One of the crucial things I wanted is that I wanted foreign movies.
Okay, so I wanted to do that too, but it's harder.
I know I understand the United States because I live in it more, and I get that. It's so easy to pick L.A. and Chicago and New York, right?
Yeah.
So easy. L.A., I almost picked Tangerine because of L.A. and the way they show that. Almost. Like, so close. It was on my short list. Or Collateral, perfect L.A. movie, you know? But I went with... my cities basically are going to be New York, L.A. Those are the two American ones. One is Hong Kong. And the other, I haven't decided yet. That's the problem, is I'm stuck between... I'm not telling you what they are, obviously. But I'm stuck between one that's set in Austin, Texas.
Okay.
And the other is set in Tokyo.
So I kind of wanted to do something similar to you.
Yeah.
But then I'd be into this.
Well, yours is more specific.
Yeah, mine is... Right. Exactly. So...
Paris, Texas.
That's the only reason I didn't do the way... I wanted to pick a foreign film. I really did want to pick a foreign film. But then I entered into small town, and this... And then I was like, ah...
Also, might be harder for... I mean...
Like suburban suburbs are something created here.
Yeah.
And the reason I kind of forced myself to pick some from Chicago, suburbs are existed. The word suburbs, the first suburb ever in the United States is from Chicago. Is it Chicago?
Yeah, no, that's good. No, I think it's fine.
No. I'm just saying that's like literally, it was just easy.
Also, it might be harder to interpret what it is considered to be an outskirts of something, right?
Yeah.
Unless you go like old style, like Kurosawa village type, or like if you go with Fellini's Strange Odysseys, you know, like it seems like it's harder to interpret what.
Well, a great one like. For me would be Cinema Paradiso for that one.
Oh, right. Yeah. Oh, that's a good one. You're right. I didn't think of that one. But yeah, I'm just saying some are blatant, but I don't think as blatant.
Yeah.
Gomorrah, maybe. Oh, wait, no, that's City. I have no idea what.
Brazil. I thought of City of God also for mine.
So I had City of God in my short list, or not my short list, my long list, and then I researched it like, oh, that's a suburb of Rio de Janeiro. Like,
that's
fuck you.
That's why I was like, I thought of City of God.
I almost texted you right there like, you should pick City of God.
I thought about it. I really did, because yeah. I was thinking about the movies, like foreign movies in general.
Yeah.
And City of God was like one of the first that came into my head. I was like, that doesn't actually take place in Rio. They go to Rio. Yeah. For like the night or whatever, to the beaches and shit. I go, but I'm like, that actually might work.
Yeah.
And I was like, no, I can't do this. And I was like,
that's funny.
Yeah.
I also wanted to choose things that are very centralized to that location, nothing that travels too far away. So like all Bond movies are gone because he travels to 50 countries and everything.
He really does, yeah.
Like things like that. No road trip movies, obviously, for the same reason. Yeah. Right.
So that's kind of why I wanted to do also. Thus, the National Lampoon movies could not make my list.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
And the only one that could make it is Christmas. National Lampoon Christmas.
Yeah.
But it's not a strong movie. Yeah. I like it, but comparison to like Vacation. It's
I thought you would have picked a Christmas Story.
Yeah.
I don't know why. I just thought you would have. They're going to travel, but in the town only.
Yeah. Home Alone. I like it a lot too, but
see, I think one I'm dubious about.
The problem with Home Alone, I feel like that's a movie that there is a suburb and it's this house isn't Wilmette. What's it called? Wilmette or one of those places.
Yeah, sure. I don't know.
Big ass house. Anyways, but I think they pawn off as like they live in Chicago.
Oh, yeah, I know.
I think they're trying to say that they live in Chicago.
Well, Sherman, Illinois, right? I'm not saying it's there. But it's John not, Hughes wrote it.
You're right. I know. So, but I think it's pointing out that they're in Chicago proper.
Yeah.
And I'm just like, okay, well, if you're doing that, then.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, some dubious stuff. I also didn't try to choose things that are like very centralized to one location. There's a lot of one location movies, but it seems like it'll be about that. It won't be about the city or town they're in. So, like, nothing set in a hospital. But high school movies are different because they can affect the life around the school. Yeah. So maybe.
There is a dark horse for me in my
life. Like, Dear White People wouldn't count for me because that's just about the campus. And it's about life also and all that, but it's, you know.
Right,
it's not
but also, more than likely, Dear White People, what school were they in? Do you remember?
Winchester.
So, yeah, that's a Westchester? That's a city town. That's a town revolved, that's a school town.
No, I'm just giving an example.
Right.
Yeah, but yes. You know, so it's a little complicated here and there. Anyway, with that, we want to do something fun. That's our marathon. That's
as you can tell, we've actually put effort into this.
Oh, I'm gonna go into the movies themselves and go background and stuff. For me, you don't have to, but whatever. And I'm going to have fun with this one. So... now, the last thing we do before we do our reviews here is that we discuss recent discoveries, which is what it sounds like. Talk about the movies we've seen independently from each other. Ralph, you don't have anything this time.
No.
But that's okay. I'm actually going to take one of mine out, and I'm going to save it for later because it's kind of complicated to talk about. So I'll just mention the two that I've seen that are one's in theaters right now, and it is a movie called Captive State. Have you heard of it, maybe? Set in Chicago.
I have heard of it, yeah.
Set in a Chicago neighborhood nearly a decade after an occupation by an extraterrestrial force, Captive State explores the lives on both sides of the conflict, the collaborations and the dissidents. And this is made by some of the producers or whatever that did, I think, the Planet of the Apes movies or something. I don't remember. But I know that one of the director of that, Matt Reeves, who did the Cloverfield movie as well, he's like one of the producers or something. But this is directed by Rupert Wyatt, who is not super well-known or hasn't done super much a lot. He did Rise of the Planet of the Apes, I believe. And this movie stars John Goodman, Ashton Sanders, Jonathan Majors, and Vera Farmiga. And this is a, you know, like a thriller, you know, sci-fi. What I like is that, what I like about, you know, alien movies or post-apocalyptic movies is that when they combine them, and I like when they're set in cities that I know, especially like Chicago. So, like, I just thought it was, like, perfect enough for me to enjoy, see what they did. And they destroy Wicker Park immediately, which I love the movie right away for that. Thank God they did that. Little joke there. And but also, like, please annihilate Wicker Park today. It'd be great for me. So, and it's about this kid who is in the middle of or participates in to be in the middle of the rebellion movement, the humans that are trying to rebel against the aliens who have taken. It's like the implication. The problem is that the implication of this movie is that it's already after all this time. It's after first contact, after the aliens have established themselves, and they've established themselves so well that they're inside our government. You know, they have power as our politicians do.
Okay.
You don't see them ever. It's weird to understand their language. You need like a translator and a machine to translate their language, and they can't. They're never around them. They have spaceships flying everywhere, but they don't ever like commune with people.
It's a good way to say that we don't have it in our budget,
right?
Yeah.
I was
or
gonna
also
say that.
We don't want to.
Right.
We don't want to.
I was just gonna say that
we don't want to take away from the movie,
right?
Because it takes away when you right. include that doesn't look like an alien because it's your interpretation of what an alien should look like,
right? The Jaws effect.
The Jaws effect.
Right. Yeah. Right. But it doesn't use the Jaws effect to that great extent, but it doesn't do it badly either. So
they did need a bigger boat.
The movie is the great thing about the movie is that it's actually more of a conspiracy movie to see how the rebellion is going to succeed pulling off this giant caper to basically do a terrorist attack against aliens and the humans who are cooperating with them. The politicians are like the mayor, I think, and not the president, but I'm sure the president is too, but someone of his cabinet members, and they're setting off this attack in Chicago. And the whole thing is that this boy knows some of the lower ground players that are okay. going to be part of it.
Cool.
And what you don't know until the end of the movie is that you've actually been watching like an espionage or like a, I don't know, not The Sting or anything like that, but it's like a political thriller, but set in an alien world
yeah.
or alien infested Chicago. So like you don't know until the end of the movie, which is not a bad thing per se, but I think it uses the wrong themes to get there because it wants to show it as a twist when I think it should have just used the humanity of these players that are doing this giant twist to their effect, like to the movie's effect, to like convince us to go against them. Like,
yeah.
It doesn't seem like people are just saying what the aliens are doing that are bad, but no one's actually seeing it. I don't think they're really convincing. They say it once. So I think there's a lot of fault in the movie, and it is a fun ride overall. It's a fun enough movie. I think it's a little too long. And I don't know if this is my theater only, but the movie is way too dark.
Really?
Oh, man, so many dark stuff I couldn't see. It was so many shadows. There's this point where the kid hides in this, like, phone booth thing. And then when they cut back to it, it's like, I don't know where he's coming. I don't know where he is.
Now,
and that's just one
scene. May I ask, so without, which one? Skokie?
No, it's set in the city.
Oh.
Primarily in the city, but it's all like.
No. What theater?
Oh, it's Skokie. Yeah, sorry. I'm like, what? Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, so I don't know what's what, but the movie was really, really dark. So if this was in 3D, it would have been worse probably. So, you know, I'm mixed on the movie. It can be a fun movie, though, if you're into the post-apocalyptic alien attack type thing. It's fun for that.
Okay.
So, yeah, there you go. Captive State. The other movie I saw is a much more interesting movie that I can't, for the life of me, have to grab this
okay.
this just so I can fucking touch it.
Sure. No need to get angry.
No, it's just so annoying. I can't do two things in a row. Okay. It's a movie called Burning, which is a Korean movie by Dong Lee Chang, or Chang Dong Lee, sorry.
Okay.
And it stars Yoo Ah In, Steven Yeun, Yong Seo Jun, and Soo Kyung Kim. Sorry, because I know her. Okay, those are the main four. I'm going to stop pronouncing really bad names. I'm going to stop mispronouncing names. So, but Steven Yeun, you know Steven Yeun, right?
Yeah, that one guy.
This is the movie. It was the first thing I've ever seen him without The Walking Dead. So I wanted to see that for that reason. Also, I heard great things about this movie. Young Soo bumps.
Is that on Shudder?
No, maybe. Is it? I bought it.
Oh, there's a movie that with Steven Yeun that they're trying to push really hard.
Oh, yes, I've seen it. That's not the same movie.
Okay.
It's a different movie, but definitely, yeah. Oh, yeah, you know who he was? He was in Okja, too. We saw him there.
We did see
him
in Okja,
so that's the second movie I've seen. Anyway, Young Soo bumps into a girl who used to live in the same neighborhood as him, who asks him to look after her cat while on a trip to Africa. When back, she introduces Ben, a mysterious guy she met there, who confesses his secret hobby. And that mysterious guy is played by Steven Yeun. And this is a movie. It's such a good movie. It's a really, really good movie. It's a two and a half bucks on this movie. And this is a creepy movie. And what I mean by creepy is that it creeps into the themes in this genre. You don't know what you're watching until basically it's too late. The movie takes its very sweet time, but it's it uses really nice dialogue, really great character moments, or like human moments kind of thing. It's about this guy who's kind of like lost in the shuffle of things, lost in the inheritance of his dad being an asshole and going to jail, and him, you know, his responsibilities and his lack of, you know, motivation to go out and find a better job for himself, things like that. It's a kind of a lost kind of soul, and also very shy and kind of like not very standing up to the world kind of guy. And this girl comes really out of the blue for him. The movie opens up with that meeting, so it's not like it takes his time for that. And once something happens and someone goes away, let's say, the movie opens its doors to show you that you've been watching a thriller movie or a suspense movie, or, I mean, in some little respects, a kind of a horror movie if you let the emotions take you where it go.
Okay.
And Steven Yeun's big time confession, where they have this, like, I think a 10-minute dialogue scene of him talking to him about what he likes to do in his spare time. He's like this rich guy who just, you know, gets off like hanging out with the poorer type, basically, which is why he's hanging out with him. And it both shows you a lot of the stuff that's going on in the class system of Korea, of South Korea, and at the same time shows you how ruthless this world can be if you're not A, careful, or B, you know, unfortunately rich or wealthy or known, let's say. Because if no one cares for you, you can easily disappear kind of thing. It has that kind of feel for it, you know?
Okay.
And the movie has an amazing ending, and then the revelations in the movie are very well paid off. If you pay attention, you'll understand it and you'll love it for it. If you don't pay attention, you will not get it. Things like that. So it rewards you very well for watching it. And there's a lot of great cinematic flourishes. There's some great fucking cinematography in the movie with fire and greenhouses and the girl dancing and naked, and she falls asleep in the middle of the trains and stuff. You'll see it when you see it. But yeah, it's a really great movie. I highly recommend it. It's one of those movies I try to watch on my short list from last year for the end of the year stuff.
Right.
Never got around to it because it came out kind of late. But Burning is available for rent and buying. I don't know. I don't think it's on Shutter, though. But it's out there.
Yeah. No, I was just curious.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. Check it out. Go. All right. They're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we'll review our first film of the evening, which is Jordan Peele's latest film, Us. Stay with us. Get it? Stay with us.
Yeah, I got it. Creep on
in, on in, on in. Can't believe how big they've got.
Did you hear Gabe got a boat? Crawl, Daddy!
He's kidding, right?
He's not kidding.
Hey, I think it's vodka clock.
Oh, yeah.
Where's Jason?
Jason?
Where were you?
I didn't know if you were lost. Stick with me, and I'll keep you safe.
There's a family in our driveway.
It's probably the neighbors.
But y'all scared of a family?
Can I help you?
Zora, put your shoes on.
If you want to get crazy, we can get crazy.
You people.
It's us.
They look exactly like us. They think like us. They know where we are. We need to move and keep moving. They won't stop until they kill us. And we kill them.
A family's serenity turns to chaos when a group of doppelgangers begins to terrorize them. This is Us, the movie. It's just called Us, not This Is Us.
The show.
Yeah, I know. There's a show. Fuck.
Get out. This is Us.
Wow. Jordan Peele's latest directorial movie written, produced, all that jazz. Doing pretty good. We'll give you the cast real quick. Starring Lupita Nyong'o, Winston Duke, Elizabeth Moss, Tim Heidecker, I guess that's his name.
Yeah, Heidecker.
I don't even care about those two guys, to be honest. I don't even know why I said their names. Shahadi Wright-Joseph, Evan Alex. And then we'll... I just wanted to get the two kids in there.
Well, Elizabeth Moss, too. She's pretty good.
Who?
Elizabeth Moss, the white lady in the movie.
Oh, didn't I not say her name already?
Did you? Maybe you did. I just didn't hear it.
I said Elizabeth Moss.
Oh, yeah. I'm sorry. I thought I didn't hear it.
I'm pretty sure I said Elizabeth Moss. Yeah, I said the first top... They're the top four build cast. I shouldn't have said the husband because he's kind of useless in the movie. But that's besides the point. This is the movie Us. Jesus Christ. I'm going to keep saying that. I'll do first impressions real quick.
Yeah.
And then we'll throw it to Oscar. I really liked the movie. Yeah, it was a really good movie. I like the suspense. I like a lot of stuff that's going on in this movie. I like the levity scenes as well, mainly played by the father, Winston Duke, Gabe Wilson in the movie. Just the way he's speaking, I just feel like that's not, no one speaks like that. And I feel like he's throwing on this character for the audience. It almost feels like he's throwing it on for the audience. But at the same time, I feel like his audience are his kids. So he's just always talked like that. It's really weird.
Yeah, he's like performing.
He's performing, yeah, for sure. 100%.
He feels like what Jordan Peele might be in real life.
Could be.
That's how he talks to his kids and wife.
Well, I've seen him do skits. I've seen Jordan Peele do skits, and I've seen him do something similar to this, you know, act out. And you're just like, well, that's not how you normally talk. I've seen you normally talk, too. It's really weird.
Yeah.
Besides that, it was a cool movie to watch. I really liked my audience overall. I liked my neighbors that were sitting next to you, actually, because they were just like, oh, shit.
Yeah. I thought they would be worse, but they weren't.
Yeah. I really like the soundtrack to this movie. I like the what's it called? I like what they do with the classic song, right? Just to say it's classic is kind of fucked up, but okay.
It's 80s. Right? It's 90s.
I think it's early 90s.
Yeah.
And I like the twist they put on it, and it kind of goes from this really cool, chill song to this really fucking creepy song.
Yeah.
And it does just a really good job. Which I totally sent it to you on iTunes, on Apple Music.
Five minutes after.
I listened to it kind of in the car, and I was like, oh, it's freaky. Yeah. But yeah, I enjoy a lot of the stuff that's going on. There's a lot of stuff, especially towards mid-end. There's a lot of stuff that I didn't even know where this movie was going. I didn't know, the compass, what it was going to entitle, what it was just going to, what it delved into in a short period of time, because this movie's not that long from my understanding.
Shy of 2 hours.
Yeah. So really an hour and 40, if you think about it. Hour 45. Yeah. It's 10 minutes of credits all the time.
Yeah.
So it really is. And now everybody gets credited. So, but I really did enjoy just the suspense, thriller part of it. It's really fucking creepy. Good use of darkness in this movie. Fucking great, to be brutally honest with you. And I know you said it earlier, but I have to agree. Lupita Nyong'o does a really fucking good job in this movie. Yeah. That was off air.
That's all good.
But yeah, overall, the sequel for Jordan Peele is a fucking good movie for his movies in general.
Two for O. Yeah, right.
Yeah, because two means usually two the wins are first.
Right.
2-0. Yeah, 2-0. Yeah. No strikes. He's got two home runs right now.
Yeah. I mean, so I said something.
He's batting 1,000.
Oh, wait. There you go. I'm sorry.
He's batting 1,000. Yeah.
He's batting 1,000.
Yes.
Okay.
But I had to put sports analogy somehow in there.
Sports ball.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Go ahead. Just go next.
Okay, good. I said this off air as well, but I compared him to. He's the next, and I mean this in the most positive way. He's the next M. Night Shyamalan.
I understood that when you said that.
Yeah, but a lot of people don't have the history to it. And a lot of people just remember Avatar.
Real quick. Wait, Avatar, The Last Airbender?
Yeah, The Last Airbender.
Yeah, I totally forgot he does that until you reminded me. I think of Avatar, and I think of Avatar.
Right, the James Cameron movie.
That or the show.
Yeah.
M. Night Shyamalan before people go, well, wow, why would you say that? Sixth Sense, Signs, Unbreakable. What's it called?
He had a great first run.
There's another one.
He had a great 5 years.
The Village. People, I'm just like giving you a quick heads up.
But The Village was the peak, right? That was the
yes, maybe I would say. Away. But listen, yeah. I just named four really good movies.
Yeah. I mean. Yeah.
Right. For what they were.
No, you're right. No, I'm not nagging on it. Some of that doesn't live as well in my head. But at the time, you couldn't find another person talking about a different movie.
Sixth Sense was a movie that's talked for like, still talking. I think it was still talked about, but I think for like a decade strong.
Yeah. Yeah.
I was like, that movie just
and Unbreakable was always my favorite superhero movie.
Right, which is really weird. Well, that's funny because like that movie came out just good time because
such a good time. That movie's all about placement.
Yeah.
That movie comes out today, it means nothing almost.
No, it doesn't do anything. It's funny. It's such lackluster. So but yeah.
Anyway, but which is to say that. They both are fresh directors-ish. I mean, I know Jordan Peele's already been famous. I've never seen a sketch show, by the way. I've only seen one episode.
You've never seen
Nope.
Key and Peele?
Nope, never seen Key and Peele.
Oh, my God. It's just going to make you watch it, and you're like, oh, he's really funny also.
No, I'm sure he is. All I hear is great things.
So right. Well, it just shows that he's not... I only saw him as a comedian.
Yeah, I have a lot of gaps, weird gaps in my watching stuff.
Right.
I guess I haven't seen fucking South Park, for example. Anyway... so it's this movie is really, really great. It's great in crafting. This movie could be almost seen entirely without the need of dialogue, which is fascinating because there's a giant swath of time that the movie can be just shown visually only, and you understand exactly what's happening with the actors' motions and eye movements and whatever, especially Lupita Nyong'o, and as well as you know, the spectacle of it, the slow pans to the boat, to the other houses, to the forest road, you know, to everything you see there is universal language. A lot of it is just visual language. And it's amazing what he does with that. And to say this earlier, but without Lupita Nyong'o nailing the fuck out of it in both the doppelganger and the regular humanoid is that, the movie would fail if it wasn't for her. It would fail without those expressions, without the candor, without the fucking intensity behind those eyes, both in being scared and being scary. Fuck yeah, it nails it. I mean, don't get me wrong, the family does in general. The cast of the family is really good, but she's like 10 times better, and clearly the one that's meant to be fucking highlighted. You know, for good reason. The movie knows what it's doing, and it has like a. And it's funny because the movie opens with some text, and the text is something akin to there's thousands of miles of undiscovered mines, shafts, and tunnels.
Which is really weird because you're
true.
Like...
It is true.
No. It's just really weird because when you watch it, you're like, what?
Throughout the movie, I kept, there's like a few times, maybe 5 times total throughout the whole movie that I was thinking about like, what do the tunnels have to do with it? And now the only thing I could think of was... Along with the opening, which I guess we could talk about. The movie opens with a flashback in the 80s where... what's Lupita Nyong'o's character's name? I forget. What do we call it, Lupita Nyong'o? We're really bad about character names. I'm sorry.
Adelaide?
Adelaide? Really?
Yeah.
They call her Addie or something?
Yeah.
Okay, because I'm like, I don't remember hearing that name.
Adelaide Whittleson.
Okay. They call her Red? Red is the name of...
Red is, yeah.
Sorry, it took me a second to realize, what, the color red? I don't remember that at all. Anyway, Nyong'o, as there's a flashback of her little girl going to, I forget where the beach was, but it's a famous beach in the United States. And
is it Venice Beach?
No, it's not Venice. That's why I made that mistake earlier that today.
Yeah, I didn't see Lunkheads.
Who?
Lunkheads.
Lunkheads.
Bodybuilders.
Okay, sure. Don't know that reference. Anyway, and the only thing I could think of with the tunnel thing is in that opening flashback where she goes to the beach, she gets like lost from her parents, and she goes into this beachfront attraction, right? Whatever they're called. Like a shaman, find yourself, which is very telling of the movie. Find yourself, and there she finds, I guess, the first doppelganger or something as a little girl. And it's weird, and it cuts immediately because obviously you're going to get flashbacks throughout the movie.
Like power goes out.
Power goes out before that. It's a very creepy setting. The owl thing. Remember? That was a cool scene at the end with the owl. And the only thing I think of with the tunnels is that it has got to be connected to that. But I don't know which way. And you forget about it. The movie kind of makes you forget about it because you're into the drama of these people and this family. And the movie both is takes its time to get to the part where the horror begins, but also it comes by faster than you can think of, because you enjoy watching these people, watching her freak out based on her PTSD of what happened that night as a little girl. But you're also, I was thinking and feeling that I don't want this family to suffer.
Right.
Is the thing. Is that, and that, which is a good sign that, you know, you give a shit about them. So, like, I didn't want them to suffer. Like, the boy's weird. The girl is, like, you know, kind of teenager, preteen or whatever. I don't know if she's preteen or teen. But, and the husband's, like, clearly the, what do you call that? The humor in the movie, right?
Comic relief.
Comic relief. Thank you. He's a comic relief, and I just feel like he's very, like, lackadaisical husband type, which is fine because it's just there to support the girl, the wife. But yeah, it's a really good movie, and it leads to a really great fucking, some great scenes and great visuals that are, and it's funny because the movie isn't gruesome. The movie's not afraid to show gruesome, but the movie isn't gruesome at all.
Yeah.
It's just like creepy and horrifying, but not... It's horrifying in what's happening rather than horrifying to show you a jump scare or to show you a decapitated head, right? Or anything like that. They don't show you, like, I don't know, the innards of something. You know, it's not a Jason movie. You know, it isn't grotesque, I guess, is my point. Yeah, it's really good stuff. I love this movie a lot. You want to get into the spoiler stuff?
Do you want to just jump in?
I mean, or do you want something else?
No, I did want to mention something. What you say is, like, once the horror starts, which kind of does, as I don't want to say prematurely, because it doesn't, it just feels early.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't let off.
Yeah.
Like, there is, like, okay, did you breathe? All right, are you ready back in? And that's basically, that's the movie.
Yeah.
And there is moments of levity throughout the movie that I think does a good job of kind of easing back the crowd. It's not, it's like doing it for the characters, but it does it for us as well. That doesn't do it for. It's like a two pronged thing, you know?
Yeah.
Where, like, you know, it's just a comment is made and you're like, oh, that's funny. Like, okay. And, you know, and all of a sudden it just kind of like, oh, alleviates you and you're not in a heightened state anymore. Not only are the characters not in a heightened state anymore because they're living in this crazy thing, right? But us as the audience, we're also not in a heightened state anymore. They're not taking it seriously. We don't have to take it seriously.
Which could be also like a lot of people take levity and intensive crazy moments like that as a way to cope, right?
Oh yeah, 100%. But what I'm saying is that.
But yeah, I know what you're saying.
Yeah.
I would say though, one of those moments, one of those beats, those comic relief beats that the husband does. I believe this is after the boat stuff. I'm being vague on purpose here. I think it's around that time. I don't remember exactly. I remember one of those beats felt a little off. Like I didn't want it to be comic relief at that moment. I didn't think it felt right. But besides that, the rest of it, I think overall, it's a really good pacing on that stuff. But I did think of something else, though, is that a great thing that this movie does is that it's not like it's not a super complicated thing. Obviously, when you start this movie, if you've seen the trailer, you already have these questions. But let's say you haven't, right? And you watch this movie, and we get to this doppelganger family invading this household. I was thinking two things. One, you start everyone and their mother probably will start thinking of where are they from? Are they aliens? Are they robots? What are they? And you know, it could be anything. Are they a metaphorical representation of their self-hate? You know, it could be something like that, right? It could be something more arty, right? You don't know. You start asking these things, and the movie does a good job of getting you to not think about those questions and watch in the moment what's happening. The movie feels very real time in a lot of big chunks of the movie.
Yes and no. It feels real time. It feels like in the beginning, like, oh, are we going to fast forward? Are we not? Mm-hmm. And you're like, oh, this is the same day.
Yeah.
Like, holy fuck. And you don't realize that until, like, they're coming home and like, oh, which just everything is still recent. Like, it hasn't changed. Mm-hmm. It just changed from day to night.
Mm-hmm.
And it just kind of did it a little fast.
Right. It does both. You're right. And but those times when it makes you feel like it's going in real time are usually the horrifying parts.
100% true.
Especially when they get the family to sit down and she tethers it to the... tethers the way she says tether to the table, right? Like that seems I mean it is shot in real time, it meant to feel that way, but after that all the horrifying stuff that happens feels like in real time. So the great thing the movie does is it makes you forget to ask those kind of questions and you can kind of enjoy the moment.
It does.
Yeah.
I guess that's why it feels so early, the way it comes in.
And the way it brings up new information, or discovering new information, or answering puzzles, or answering mysteries to the what's happening or how it's happening, is that it does it so well enough that I remember, for me, at least my own mindset, is that I would only think of the answer seconds before the answer came up, which is to say that's just for me personally, the pacing of the way the mystery was being unfolded really worked for me.
Yeah.
And maybe for others it would be a little slightly different on that time frame. Some people would be like more into,
well, or I like to throw ideas out immediately. Yeah. Once something that I see that I can see, like, oh, that's going to be this boop, I can throw 36 ideas out.
Right.
None of them could stick.
Right.
Or one of them will.
Well, like, yeah, but that's just a shotgun of ideas, right?
Yeah, but that's something who like I am. Like, I just go, and I usually, whichever one I think is the strongest, I go with, and I usually, yeah, that's the one I say to myself, it probably will be this, and I love it when I'm wrong, because I'm like, oh, I didn't see it going there.
Yeah.
You know, and at the same time, I like it when I'm right, sort of-ish, but as long as I'm not too right, and I'm like, ah, it's predictable, you know?
Yeah.
You don't want to be both either, so...
No, yeah, you're right. Yeah. There's a thin line between, like, wanting... Feeling amazing that you got it right, but it wows you still. That's hard to pull off.
It is, yeah.
So I think if you were one of those people for this movie, kudos to you. I literally figured the stuff out seconds before
they showed most of the movie, that's how I was, too.
Or like a moment or so. Yeah. And it was an amazing feeling discovering the movie as it was telling me what's going on. And that, it's a power for sure. And I really love the movie. Love that part of the movie. So now we can get into spoilers. For us,
go ahead. Now.
Okay, let's call the cops.
I did. They're 14 minutes away.
What? 14 minutes? Okay. Jason, give me the bat.
What bat?
The baseball bat, the bat. There's one in the
car. Here.
Thank you.
Gabe.
All right, hold on. I got this. Let's try this again.
Gabe.
No. All right.
Gabe.
I got this. Now, I thought I already done told y'all to get off my property, okay? So if y'all want to get crazy, we can get crazy. Now, the cops are already on their way. Hey!
So it's funny how the result of what's happening in these tunnels is so strange and it's vague, but it's not meant to be anything other than just a horrifying aspect of America, I guess. Which might be the only...
Which was really funny because the movie starts off with the description, with the words saying there's millions of tunnels and stuff like that. And then it's this crazy slow pull-out shot of bunnies in cages.
Right, with that weird chanting music. Kids,
yeah,
something, right?
Kids in the background playing playground or some weird shit, chanting and... Really weird.
Throughout the whole opening credits,
yeah. And it's just this
people are getting antsy in their seats.
Amazingly slow pull-out shot.
Yeah.
Like, I wanted to hit the film, the fucking, what's it called? Cinematographer, the fucking guy behind the camera.
Zoom out faster.
Just be like, Jesus Christ, just fucking show us the thing. Like,
because and you see like a weird classroom, you don't know what it is. Well, you don't know. Windows.
You don't know. So is it weird. A classroom? It's just a bunch of like.
You see desks.
You see desks, so you can assume it should be a classroom.
Right.
There's a lot of stuff going on in that scene. And then the movie does a really phenomenal job of making you forget that scene.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because I didn't think about it again until we're back in there.
No, I see. It's funny. I thought of it earlier when so I want to say something else before I forget, is that when they invade the house at night, the doppelgangers are expected, Red and the family, are expected to kill the family that night, right? They don't expect them to leave.
Yes.
She has a monologue scene for sure. In that monologue scene, she mentions, she calls herself the shadow and how the person of this shadow is doing these amazing things. And for every amazing thing, the shadow gets an equal opposite reaction.
Yeah.
Kind of thing. Fucking freaky. And the way she speaks is very bizarre and strange. I want to see the...
Very raspy.
I can only imagine the outtakes on that. And it's really a great scene. And it, some of it's hard to understand, but it's barely, it's enough to understand. And when she talks, and she actually mentions rabbits in that monologue.
That they eat.
That they eat. Yeah. And that immediately went, took me that to that opening. So I thought of it then. But
I will agree with you there, yes.
I immediately thought like, oh, she must have grown up there maybe.
I something. Remember the rabbit thing as well. Yeah. And I was like, okay, that's what I thought too. But like, still the movie does a really good job of making you forget it. Like,
oh, yeah. Oh, after that, I forgot about it.
Right. Well, that's
I didn't think about it again.
But you don't think about
it's
it.
It's like I was in
like, there's head. That quick snippet. Oh, shit, the rabbits. Yeah, you're right. And then you just like, oh, wait, she's doing something really cool. And then you're like, what?
Yeah.
And that's, that the movie literally like just what's you. Like, yeah. That's it. You're done.
And true to form, true to Jordan Peele, I mean, the only real, the only sociopolitical or whatever word you want to use that connects this movie to his previous, which is Get Out, is that the connection of, I mean, it's like a one line when they explain the reason behind these tunnels and what they're being used for, is that the government at some point in their history has been engineering twins or doppelgangers of every citizen in the United States to control their movements or to observe their movements by the way they copy the original human form, right? That's essentially what they say. And that's all they say. There's no great thing about it. There's no actual conspiracy about it. This is just the result of them ignoring this huge project that they did illegally for shady reasons, government meaning, and that this is the consequences to that. The movie's about the consequences of this project, but the movie is not about the project at all. The movie's so clearly about the family. And throughout the movie, I was thinking, like, they're the only survivors that we've seen. It's not like, even in the background, when we find out that this is becoming countrywide, nationwide, right?
At first, it feels super local.
It feels super local. The whole time, you think it's just them.
The movie does a really good job of, I really feel like it's only them. Nobody else.
Right, because with the flashbacks, you only think it's because of what happened to her as a little girl.
Exactly.
You never figure it.
You never figure it, right.
It's so good.
And you just figure, like, she copied her life or something, and it was really fucking weird.
Yeah.
It's some crazy supernatural things going on.
Yeah.
And then you get to the nitty-gritty, you're like, holy shit, it's not just them. Well, even then, it pulls the wool over my, you know, what's it called, over my face. Because when they go to the next family, which is the friends, I just thought, like, maybe they got it because they were there.
Well, I thought that too. I was rationalizing why they would have doppelgangers too.
That's what I did.
I was thinking, oh, because they were with them. That's
because they were with them with all the coincidence happening with the 11-11,
right?
The frisbee exactly landing on the circle,
right?
With all these little coincidences, and I was just like, maybe just. Because they wanted to cover their bases.
It wasn't until they tried to call the cops that I figured that it was nationwide. And right before, and then that's when they turned on the news. I'm like, fuck, this movie, damn it.
Yeah, this movie, damn it, indeed.
Yeah.
And then you just noticed that, like, well, everyone got caught off guard. And in reality, I mean, not probably not everybody, but a good majority of everybody, right? And the only reason is because this is how paranoid Adeline or whatever her name is is. Just she was, and she's kind of like always been on guard.
Yeah, she didn't know she had what's the word? Not motivation, a benefit. A pro? No. The only thing she had leverage or that she had going for her that every other person in the world didn't is that she had met her doppelganger when she was a kid. Yeah. She had the fear of it. The fear is what kept her alive.
Yeah.
The fear of the PTSD, what happened, that flashback.
Yeah,
that flashback is more crucial than even the movie suggests because of
it. It really is. Yeah, it really is.
And it makes you feel so necessary about it. It makes me want to go back and rewatch it for a lot of reasons, especially for that one scene where she's walking with her parents. Oh, so good. And they do those cutback scenes, those match scenes. Yeah. Oh, my God. Those match cuts are amazing. Anyway, and it's very creepy when you find out the truth of everything, but like, it helps you realize why this family is the only family that's surviving. But also, the real reason also is that, of course, you find out the big twist is that she's the doppelganger. She's always been the doppelganger.
Yeah.
Yeah.
She always has been the doppelganger.
Yeah. And the only reason that the entire nation is under attack is because
an actual human.
And a human was always free from that shackle of not being the shadow. Yeah. Or it was the shadow for sure, but like it was like a weird mixture of both and something must have happened and they split and then she helped the rest split to kill themselves.
Yeah.
It's so weird.
It's like the analogy I can give you is the people who live in the basements or the live in the tunnels or whatever,
yeah,
are in the cave. Have you ever heard of the story of the cave? Like, you never. It's a super old story. Like the cave is like you only see what's in the cave and you never explore anything further. But if you turn around and you step outside, you realize there's a gigantic world of everything else. That's what it is.
Yes, actually, there's a very great metaphorical in The Leftovers about that. And it's continuous, sorry.
Yeah, well, that's a very old fucking metaphor in general, right?
Yeah.
It's like they're in the cave. And the one person who finally turns around and says, hey, there's other stuff going on over there, happens to meet her other self.
Yeah.
And takes advantage, right?
Yeah.
And takes over her life. So... since the one person who's now in there, the actual human, always knew that there was an outside because she never lived inside the cave, and now she's forced to be inside the cave.
Yeah.
It's like, well, how do I get everybody out of here?
It is a dark reversal of it.
It is fucking dark. And it's so dark. But it's great.
And it makes you reconsider all of the actions that the character was taking. And don't get me wrong, it was for good reason. She wanted her family safe. She wanted to stay alive, which we were with her.
Yeah.
But
we are with her, but we're with her for different reasons. Yeah. We're with her because we think she's been damaged from having this interaction before.
Yeah.
Not because she's afraid of that she might lose everything she has because she took it away from somebody.
Yeah, but it's a great mindset that that Jordan Peele makes us put in, because it makes us into an Eloy.
Well, who are we rooting for here?
Well, the thing is that I think the movie forces us to be an Eloy, which is, do you know the Time Machine, the movie? The OG movie?
Yeah.
Or the story?
Yeah, yeah.
You know the Eloys and the Morlocks?
Yeah. Yeah, I do.
I think Morlocks is called. The Eloys lived on top. They were white with the robes. They held the riches, the grapes, right? And the Morlocks lived underneath and did all the work, and they can never come up, and they only come up to snatch people from the top, right, to eat or whatever. That's what they are. These are the Morlocks. These are the shadows, right?
Yeah.
And the Eloys, it's like they're forcing us to be... To regular humans. So we're the humans that have always lived with the sky, right? As the other lady put it.
Right.
And as Red put it. And the movie forces you to reconsider the nature of all that and why that is a problem. That could be a problem in the mindset of how you're living, how other people live compared to you, that when the movie does that reversal and that twist, you don't know what to... Maybe you don't know, or it makes you reconsider who to root for. Or what's bad or good about this?
Right.
Maybe. And maybe a tons of other little questions in there too. And I myself don't know what to think of it either. Like, I feel bad for both.
Yeah, you do feel bad for both. But you also realize, this is like, or at least I came to the realization where, like, you know how it's almost like an unexecuted plan. But very executed, very well executed at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
More like an unfinished plan.
Mm-hmm.
And what else besides killing your other selves do you do? Or try to kill your other selves, right? Because it doesn't succeed for everybody, right? That's just the honest truth, because there's still cameras and, you know, seeing of everybody and everything like that. You're not going to be able to get everybody.
The people who are out of country.
Right, exactly.
Right?
You can't get everybody. Just plain and simple facts, right? In America.
Right.
That's what it is. It's just based. But is that you just want to make this big display, right? And but it feels like this childish display too, where it's like this child dream, which is like the Hands Across America thing.
No, I know. That was perfect.
And it was perfect because of the fact
it is a child's...
It feels childish.
Fucked up version.
And you're just like, it is. It is a child's fucked up version of it. And you're like, hey, how did people drive attention for this? Well, they did this. Why can't we do this? And it was just like...
Yeah.
As you grew up, you never grew up with anything else, so you're just like, well, this is all I have.
Yeah.
And, you know, it felt really childish. Like, she never grew up from that, so she just kept adding on to it. And
it became like a dark adult version of it. It's like
now I'm very curious, though, as in, like, how many times has she snuck out? Has she always lived down there since just waiting, abiding her time? Obviously not, because how else did she...
I think of the children. Are they half shadows? Because the children were born from the...
Well, and it explains a lot. If you think about it, yeah, you're right, It explains why the kids are always, always so fucking quiet, considering the dad and the mom.
That's true. They don't say anything. At least the husband tries to.
Specifically the son. The son is like pulling teeth with that kid.
Yeah.
The son is always just like, I don't comprehend what's going on right now.
Yeah, the son feels even more underdeveloped than the rest of the shadow people.
He does.
Or the whatever they're called. Yeah. Because of the way he mocks his twin. It, like, he wants a play a play friend. He doesn't want to kill him, it feels like. It feels like he's just doing what the mother asks, you know? The daughter knows, definitely knows. And it's almost like the daughter, like, she didn't keep up with track running, but the doppelganger did.
Yeah.
It's like weird combos.
Yeah, there's little flourishes. It's, and it explains a lot of stuff, especially why the end, when you still don't come to the realization that it was, they don't give you the big reveal of what's it called? Adelina, right?
Yeah.
Being the shadow.
Yeah.
Is that ballet slash scene.
Yeah.
And you're like, holy fuck, this girl's crushing her. And then you're like, oh, it was because it was actually that was who she was supposed to be, a ballerina for real.
Yes.
And not like she's the one with the athletic ability.
Who's in charge of that flashback? Who's in charge of that dance?
Right.
I'm asking you, do you have an answer?
Who's in charge of the dance?
Yeah, who's doing the dance? Who's in charge? Who do you think is in charge of the movements in that dance, in that flashback, when they're dancing the ballerina thing? I think I was thinking about that. It was kind of hard to pinpoint, and I almost think it was the regular that stuck
Red
underneath. Right? And it's,
well, I felt like it was Red the whole time.
Yeah,
yeah. I mean, I felt like it was her, and I felt it was saying it's her.
Yeah.
The whole time.
And you're thinking the whole time is that she's actualizing, but in reality, she's the real.
And I honestly feel like, thinking about it now, just specifically this moment right now, is that I think she chose everything for her in the shadow. Hmm. She chose her husband.
It
makes you rethink everything. Yeah. She chose her husband, and with her husband, she chose it to get these two, and she knew what she was getting into with that and what she could deal with.
Maybe.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's kind of crazy.
It can go pretty deep. It can go pretty deep. And not even in the way that it's like, oh, what event happened first, or why, or like how she did this, or how she pulled this off. It isn't just like the technical stuff. It's just so many things about the value of your id. You know, you can compare a lot to this as your subconscious, as your the path not taken. It could be taken as what a doppelganger means, or what is the consequences of having, you know, stolen a life, or in this case, in her case, and also the horrifying implication that everyone in that country, whoever stayed and wasn't away or didn't get accidentally killed but otherwise, how many of them survived? I mean, not many. Probably. I mean, no one in the movie survived other than his family, which is fucked up.
Yeah.
And this Hands Across America, the movie ends with that shot of
helicopters,
of those people. You know? All of those people, hand to hand. That's all those deaths right there. That's describing every death.
Yeah.
Because they only go there after each kill. And they understand all the shadows know their lights or whatever, their Eloy, so well that they've succeeded in killing. Like, even when they do the news footage thing, and they're seeing the cell phone footage, the live footage of this guy recording them doing the Hands Across America thing, and the guy's doppelganger shooting the cell phone footage knows where he's at and finds him and kills him in front of the camera. You know, that's how well they know him, right? And it's funny how the human who was switched, who started all this, couldn't beat the shadow.
Yeah.
That's fun. Yeah. That's interesting. And that's that could say a lot of things too.
Almost say like it's the shadow's turn to live. So
yeah.
And the shadow was already living in it.
Right.
It does say a lot of stuff, yeah. Right. But it also says a lot of like we almost like these were humans or just they just needed to be shown the light. You know?
Actually, I just thought of this now. I asked earlier about the ballerina dance and who was in control. I think it is much more clear that it was the Eloy. The shadow in this case, in the movie, but not the real shadow. Fuck, the real Adeline. And because of that, when she goes down there by herself to rescue her son, the fake, she almost loses entirely because of that dance she does. Remember how she's mimicking her movements and slashing at her?
Yeah.
That's like a replication of that dance, right? Kind of. At least dance movements.
Similar, yeah. You're not wrong.
So yeah, I was thinking of that. Yeah, that probably proves that it was her controlling her from the bottom, from the tunnels or whatever they're at. And very creepy scene, the pan shots when they're like murdering the rabbits and shit. Oh yeah. My god. Ugh. No. The sounds. Fucked up. A lot of rabbit killing with the favorite recently.
Didn't see it.
No, they didn't kill a rabbit, but it's like a rabbit's everywhere kind of thing. Anyway. Anything else?
Makes sense. They procreate fast as fuck.
No, I know, right? And the supply of raw rabbit. It's hard to say that. Anyway, anything else on this movie?
No, I just wanted to give a... Like I said, it does it works in the darkness very well, this movie.
Mm-hmm.
And most of the movie, actually, a good portion, especially in the house, is almost completely dark.
Yeah, and when he's out in the ocean in the boat, that's really dark.
That's really dark as well. What's it called? It uses lighting and darkness really well because it's very minimal lighting, but you have to take advantage of that minimal lighting, right?
Yeah.
But that one scene where they're in broad daylight, she uses a shadow to steal the kid. Yeah. You're like, holy fuck. And you don't even see her until you don't see her until she makes the movement.
She's a shadow of the red car to hide. Like, it's so cool.
Yeah.
It's so cool. It's bonkers. I fucking missed that completely.
Yeah, I missed it completely too. And everyone I was like, holy shit.
Yeah.
Like, it was really freaky.
Makes you want to go back and see the whatever match shot they did that showed right before revealing that it was her to see if you could see and spot her. That would be cool to find out that it, you know, whatever, however it works.
Agreed.
So, yeah. So that is Us, and that is our review of Us. We loved it. Check it out, guys. I'm sure you have by now. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we'll review another film. This one is a Netflix original film called Triple Frontier. Find out what that's about and stay with us.
I have never had a feeling as pure or proud as completing a mission with all of you.
Everything we've done for the last 17 years, trying to make a difference.
And we never took a dime. You've been shot 5 times for your country, and you can't even afford to send your kids to college.
I got a job for you.
I'm retired.
Fish, I need a pilot.
I got the new baby now.
This can change you and that baby's life forever.
We finally get to use our skills for our own benefit.
All right, let's do it.
We're gonna get Gabriela Martín Larrea, head of one of the biggest drug cartels. I've got estimates. He's got over $75 million in cash.
If we're not gone forever, after you make your move, we are dead.
You cannot go back to your normal life after tonight. You guys need to own the fact that what we're about to do is criminal.
Loyalty is attested when 5 from...
Fuck me.
That's not how you wanted it?
No.
Okay.
What are you, newspaper from the 20s?
25.
Newspaper, but get your popcorn here.
I'm not at a ball game.
I don't know.
Are you ready?
We're recording. No, this is part of the show.
I know.
Do the damn thing. What are we doing?
Loyalties are tested when 5 former Special Forces operatives reunite to steal a drug lord's fortune, unleashing a chain of unintended consequences.
Hmm.
Okay.
Yeah.
This is directed by J.C. Chandor, written by a bunch of people. Mark Boll, J.C. Chandor, and Mark Boll again. That's a story. All that stuff, yeah.
Yeah. Is it based on something real? No.
No. Maybe.
Okay.
I don't think so.
Because I know a lot of shady shit has been going on in the... I won't be surprised if there's a story like this.
It probably is, yeah. Anyways, this is starring Ben Affleck.
Ben Affleck.
Oscar Isaac. Hmm. 2 first names. Can't trust that guy. Charlie Hunnam. Garrett Hedlund, which I'll never remember his name. And I guess the next biggest person I would give it to is Adria Arjona.
No, you missed...
Pedro Pascal?
Yeah, Pedro Pascal. Yeah. He's the fifth man.
Yeah.
Well, not the fifth guy. He's the fifth guy you haven't mentioned. Yeah. He's from the show, right?
Super helpful.
No, the show that we liked a lot, and then we stopped watching it, about the Colombian cartel and stuff. About... What's the name of it?
He was in Kingsman, right?
Yeah, he was in Kingsman as well, but... He's in Game of Thrones. He plays the guy who the mountain killed. Spoiler alert.
Was he in Narcos?
Narcos, that's the one. Narcos, that's where he started from. That's where we all kind of, well, not started. Because I think he had done Game of Thrones by then. But Game of Thrones, he was such a minor role. He was great in it.
Yeah.
He played the Sand Snake or whatever his name was, remember? Fights the mountain for Tyrion.
Yeah.
I think that's him. I'm pretty sure that's him. Anyway.
Was that him?
Pedro Pascal is a pretty cool actor. I like him. He's definitely the best thing in Narcos season 1. And that's why they gave him like more of a highlighted thing in the later seasons. And then he dropped off of that, and then now he's doing movies and whatnot. Anyway, that's him.
Okay.
So, I'm assuming, but you're up to you. Sorry, you were saying stuff. Is that the end of the thing?
Yeah, that was the end.
Okay.
Yeah.
Do you want me to start off this time?
I guess.
I was assuming. I'm sorry. I didn't want to assume, but
no,
I started
going. Go ahead. Go ahead with first impressions. Yeah. I have a feeling I know what they are.
Yeah, I mean, this movie is, it's okay.
Oh. Wow.
This movie's okay, and it's, I think it tries too hard on its themes. I think if, I don't know, I think there's some, I think there is legit, one of the characters in this movie, I think there is a weird, strange reversal on what this character was said to be and what he becomes in this movie that I found like a dark turn. And I don't mean a dark turn in like, oh, this guy, this thing went dark. No, I mean like it went bad, like a bad turn. And I don't think the movie did a good job from that point, at least with that character and his actions, to justify how, like, me giving a shit about it, you know? So I think that's the biggest mistake of this movie. However, the rest of the thing is that, yeah, I mean, it is, I guess, a slightly more expensive version of what one action can lead to another action kind of thing. It does feel very, you know, very linear, the movie. If it, the whole time you know that it's a gigantic cautionary tale, or it's a gigantic, and it's the same one. It's the same one you've known from the beginning of the movie. Once a certain thing hits, I mean, should we say the spoiler is that, not the spoiler, but that they succeed in stealing the money? Is that too bad?
No, I think we expect that.
Yeah, right. Okay, I don't think it's, because I can see someone going to this movie thinking that the entire movie is them trying to steal the money. You can almost see an entire movie set where they have to hole up there and to fight the entire narco or
world. Yeah.
Right. Right. Like you can see
all
a movie
of,
people
all of
thinking
Colombia.
That. Right. Bolivia. They're in Bolivia.
Bolivia, my fault.
You can see fighting the entire cartel, right, in that house and trying to take the money, right? But no, they succeed and they leave that place as soon as they, you know, as they planned it, is my point. So that's not a spoiler. After that, I guess we can consider spoilers. But yeah, you know, the whole journey home, it's or trying to get out of that country, it's just one cautionary tale. That's the same one though, after another. And I don't think the movie offers up anything beyond its very on the face premise. And I don't think the action was particularly good enough for me to carry it, or for it to carry me out there with it, or the acting for me to be particularly that invested into it. So the movie was a bit of a letdown. Not to say that it was necessarily bad. For this type of movie, there are way worse. Just watch the last 5-10 years of Nicolas Cage. But there are also way better. And way more subtle, too. This is not subtle at all.
No, it's not.
But that's what you get with J.C. Chandler, honestly. But his movies are all about that. Like Margin Call, is literally that. Literally that. It's one person telling another person something, and that person having to tell a bigger person, a bigger fish person, the same thing they just told you there. It's like the same. It's like, well, that's the biggest problem with that movie. I hate that movie.
Yeah.
But and you think of All Is Lost. Have you seen All Is Lost?
No.
It's the movie with Robert Redford about the
where he's lost at sea. Yeah.
That movie's the same thing, but that movie's amazing because of the performance, and literally there's no dialogue. The whole movie's shown in action. And the movie has a lot more around its setting and the way it's made to you know, go along with it, to make you love it and stuff. But that movie's the same thing. It's one catastrophe he has to problem solve after another. This is the same thing. The guy's made a career of making problem solving movies.
Oh, it's Castaway.
Or conflict movies, right? Just conflict. Solve, conflict solve, conflict die, conflict solve. So yeah, this, I guess I'm not surprised to see this movie coming out of Chandler's toolbox. But those are my general expressions. What do you think?
I'd have to mostly mirror.
Yeah?
I will agree with you that Ben Affleck's character sucks because...
Oh, good. You know which character I was talking about.
Yeah. It's just the character doesn't keep true to who he is. And I agree 100% because I feel like we hype this person up. And I get the movie is trying to say, like, he's that hard on times that he's willing to take a bigger risk or whatever. Mm-hmm. But I just feel like it still was almost unbelievable.
Yeah.
Like they don't even make an effort in trying, like, him looking at a watch going, we don't have enough time. But we can't let we can't fucking screw this over. We need to do it. Like, you don't even have this moment of like him dealing with that problem. He just like pushes on. the whole time. And I'm like, oh, okay. I don't know. It just it felt really off. It didn't need to happen. But the movie does this whole where it's like you bit off more than you can chew, and now you got to deal with everything, right?
Yeah.
And the movie tries to – this is the other problem I didn't like about the movie is that the movie goes like half into the message and half not, especially mm-hmm. with the ending. Like,
oh, my God.
Yeah.
That annoyed the fuck out of me.
Like, and it was just like, why? Why did you have to do it? Like, you could have just left it. Didn't have to say anything.
Yeah.
You know, I guess. But at the same, it was just like, it's really weird because I felt like the message was the movie was trying to say, like, because they weren't doing it for honor or glory or they were doing it for their own selfish reasons.
Yeah.
That's why they failed, right?
That's why they failed or don't deserve it.
Or don't deserve it, right?
Right.
But, and then they, I just felt like because of that, that's
this movie works in the 70s. If you make this movie in the 70s, I can see that message actually playing out in a time where people would believe this kind of thing more. But that's not an excuse, though. The movie still has the same problems if I were watching it today for the first time. But at least I can excuse it because it was made back then. But no, it's made this year, and it's not excusable. I don't understand what this movie is really trying to say. And if it really is the face of it, what it's trying to say, if it's all on the face of it, then it's saying it wrong.
Yeah,
and I'm not convinced.
I agree. That's what I was trying to get at. Yeah. I agree. It just doesn't do it right.
And these actors are good too.
That's the worst part.
I know. Right?
That's the worst part about this movie.
Oscar Isaac is in this movie, bro.
That's the worst part about this movie is that all of these people are good.
Yeah,
I have no problem with any of these actors.
Yeah,
even Batman, like
Charlie Hunnam.
Not yet.
No. Not yet. Right.
Yeah, the British Batman. Yeah, so yeah,
I guess it would be.
It was a letdown for me. I think I rated this 2.5 on Filmbox or Letterboxd.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I did not like it. It's hard. I like what's going on in the movie. I like the stuff, execution stuff. Even that felt kind of lackluster. But it was still cool to watch some of the stuff that's going on. I just felt like I liked the first half, everything up to he isn't who he is anymore, which is when they take off more money than they need to.
Oh, you mean when they're in the house?
Yeah. After that, it was just a big downhill for me.
Yeah, I started like really questioning the movie at that point where we really didn't like
and
it.
I really,
it's a spoiler session, but
yeah. Spending spoilers now.
Jesus Christ.
Shit. The guards. They're back.
We gotta go.
All right, we can each take a backpack of cash, and we're gone.
No, there's about $100 million waiting in the van out there. We are not leaving them any of this money.
What's the alternative here?
We need to hunt quickly.
That's not what I signed up for.
Time's up. Move.
Back there, man. We don't need messes like that.
It wasn't just Lorea's money. A lot more people are going to come after you.
You lied to us.
They got every town covered.
So we go through them.
As far as Lil Harding, you think it's going to be.
It's too late to walk away.
Crashland, here we all die.
What was I talking about?
I don't know.
Okay. No, when he kills the people of the farms.
Oh, no. At that point, I already hate the movie. Where
No. Like, literally, at that point, I was just like, oh, I'm done with this movie.
Yeah, well, yeah, I guess so. But I was already done before that. Where I was done is that where they didn't drop the payload. But when the fucking chopper crashed, that was the worst part. Drop the big payload. We still have millions. Keep the stuff in the actual cargo hold. But drop the gigantic thing that's hanging off your goddamn helicopter.
Yeah.
That's what... When they were saying they dropped the cargo, I thought they were going to drop the big fucking thing. And no, they didn't. They tried that too late. I'm like, no, you dropped that first. What do you need this for?
Right.
Or at least drop it there. You can always come back and make an expedition. I don't understand. Oh, my God. I did not understand it at all. I did not buy any of that motivation. Then I buy that they will let this guy say... I don't understand. Why four of them will let the greed of this one guy, which made no sense because he didn't seem greedy in the opening, to say what, you know, I get it. Oscar Isaac's character was also greedy, and he did start this whole thing, and he seems like he's the most cavalier of them. He's the only one still in the business, things like that. But, like, even he gets softer, strangely, and I don't understand.
Yeah.
You know, and there's no hierarchy either. Not that there has to be, but I guess there should have been. I thought there was a hierarchy,
and then there isn't.
At the drop of a hat, there isn't a team leader. Aren't these people supposed to know that shit? Aren't they born with knowing where a team leader is, what position you're in, what to do, what not to do?
Right.
If you start questioning every order, guess how easily any military mission can fail?
Like, right.
Really fast. You know, that kid had more sense. The kid that killed Ben Affleck
from
The Village had more sense at what he was doing than any of these other characters.
I guess.
When he finally killed them, I'm like, at first I thought it was great because I really hated that character. But what it turned out to be at the end, I hated that more. Retroactively, I hated the killing of him way worse because of what it did at the end.
I saw it coming. I saw that. I didn't see it coming like right when it happened, when he got killed.
Yeah.
I was like, yeah, they're probably not going to come out with as much money, which was true.
Yeah.
And then
they kept losing money along the way.
Yeah, that was just going to be that was going to be true regardless.
Yeah.
But I was like, yeah, they're probably just going to focus on him and they might I thought for sure the two brothers or the one guy was going to give his money, his share away. I knew that much, but
I didn't think all of them. I definitely didn't think Oscar Isaac would give
it. I felt like it was just like you were pushed into it.
Yeah, like if you'd be a dick if you didn't.
Yeah.
I would have. I can see myself in that room saying, like, fuck you, we came for this. I'm going to get something out of this. Otherwise, what is the point of suffering all that? We're going to give it to the entire thing. This family already has millions. Why do we have to give it all of them? I don't understand.
Right.
I didn't understand any of that. The motivation of that sucked. And ultimately, Oscar Isaac's plan at the end there was to go to Australia to go with that, hook up with that girl. Although he did give the coordinates of the bags, right?
So why didn't you like the movie at the end? Was that what you didn't like?
The coordinates?
Yeah.
No. That part was okay, but it was like too little, too late. I assume that's the coordinates where the money.
Yeah, that's
the
what chasm, I thought it was also.
I mean that's okay because you can always go. Exactly, you can always go back. Why?
No. I actually hated that part. Yeah. I hated it because it was just like, well, at least we can go back for it. He says some line. Charlie Hunnam says.
They could have
said
that like 50 times along the way.
Well, you're right. He says some line he says some line to him. He's like, well, we could always do this later or something like that or another time. And I was just like, you guys just bitched and moaned about the whole fucking losing the guy and doing this for the wrong reasons. But you're gonna go collect the money, like.
Yeah.
And I was.
Oh,
just
thinking, I see where you're going.
That's what frustrated me. And I was like, oh fuck,
right.
Like,
But at that point, because I guess the movie was so committed to have the other three, minus Oscar Isaac's character, the other three so committed to not take the money and not do any more of this extracurricular poison money mission, is that they were going to get the money even with the coordinates, they were never going to go back for the money. So I figured that the characters were committed, so they just gave, you know, the team leader, I guess, the chance to retrieve it if he wants it, because they were never going to be a part of it again. I guess that didn't bother me that much. What bothered me is they didn't take the money in that meeting, you know?
Yeah, I guess.
That's what bothered me.
Yeah. I don't really have anything else to say about this movie.
I mean, this movie kind of bothered me a lot throughout the way. And it's just funny because they're all like little moments. The rest of it was fine. Like the car chase with the shooting, that was cool. Like the action was okay, it was stable. You know, it wasn't like at least it wasn't too wonky, you know?
Yeah.
Like, I forgot to mention this earlier in my recent discoveries, but Captain State, one of its bad things is that it's a lot of shaky cam, which did not do favors for that movie. This movie is pretty steady.
Yeah.
Nice. You can see what's going on even at nighttime. That was nice. That was cool. The whole house heist thing, when the movie still had me, was pretty cool.
That was cool, yeah.
And when I saw Ben Affleck's character, you know, going nuts about taking all the money, every single scrap of dollar, you know, I'm like, I'm just putting the place down. Carry what you can. What's the big deal? And I said that then, but I still like, okay, maybe he's in the intensity of it. He's, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
I really just wrote it off. It wasn't a big deal. But I kept making that mistake and doubling down on it. I'm like, oh my God, what are you trying to make me think about, movie? And I don't think he knew.
Yeah.
And I don't care. And I'm sorry, but this movie's not good. I gave it 2 stars, I think.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
So, so that's Triple Frontier. Why is it called Triple Frontier?
I don't know.
Okay. Yeah, I don't think it knows either. Well, I mean, maybe it's a military term.
Maybe.
And the truly sad thing is that I like this director half the time.
Yeah. Well, I had high hopes for the movie, yeah. Not because of the stars or the actors, but I like this type of movie.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. And also, Mark Boll is a pretty good journalist and a screenwriter. I mean, this is his real big stinker for me. He did Zero Dark Thirty. He wrote Zero Dark Thirty.
Oh wow, okay.
And The Hurt Locker. That was I think he won for that movie. But yeah, that's him.
Yeah.
That's what he's known for. Sad. You know? It's sad. That's weird. This movie. Anyway, that's our thoughts on Triple Frontier and our super long review. We're gonna take a quick break again. When we come back, we'll review our first marathon of our first movie of the new marathon we're doing, which is Blue Velvet. Stay with us.
Put your hands up, on your head, do it! Get on your knees, do it! What are you doing? Who are you? What's your name? What's your name?
Jeffrey.
Jeffrey what?
Jeffrey nothing.
Give me your wallet. Give me your wallet! Jeffrey Beaumont. What are you doing in my apartment, Jeffrey Beaumont?
I wanted to see you.
Are you kidding? Who sent you here?
Nobody.
I've seen you before.
I sprayed your apartment. I took your key. I didn't mean to do anything except see you.
What did you see tonight? Tell me.
I saw you come in. I saw you talk on the phone.
And then?
You got undressed.
Do you sneak in girls' apartment to see them get undressed?
Never before this.
Get undressed. I want to see you.
Look, I'm sorry. Just let me leave.
No way! I want to see you. Get undressed!
After finding a severed human ear in a field, a young man soon discovers a sinister underworld lying just beneath his idyllic suburban hometown.
Blue Velvet.
This movie, Blue Velvet. Not red. Not purple. Directed and written by David Lynch, starring Isabella Rossellini, Kyle MacLachlan, Dennis Hopper, Laura Dern, Dean Stockwell. I'm going to give that one to Dean Stockwell as well. Francis Bay. And
a few Twin Peaks cameos too.
Yeah, Jack Nance. Cameo Twin Peaks. So, I guess I'll go first since I went first on the other one and then you went second on the other one. So, it makes sense. And it's... that doesn't mean anything.
I mean, you know what I mean.
So, this is my first choice in my suburban lifestyle thing. And this is the... I think everything is pretty in the world. Everything is going on, but there's actually always something shady or something... an underworld, as they said, going on in the dark, right?
Mm-hmm.
This is a college town. Kyle MacLachlan's character, Jeffrey Beaumont, he's the one who his father's in the hospital. He comes back, helps around the shop. He walks everywhere. Like, he's just doing a routine, right? Nothing's crazy out of the ordinary besides the fact that his dad is in the hospital because of health conditions.
Yeah.
And he's got to be there to help him out. That's the only thing. He just happens to find an ear. He's still a kid. He's throwing rocks at things. Like, little kid stuff. Like, that's not, you know, to pass the time or just to let out frustration or whatever the case is, right? And when he finds this ear, kind of like he's been looking for something out of the normal because life has been so normal, right? That he kind of like gets involved in this whole big thing about, you know, information. He finds out a bunch of stuff information wise. There's a singer involved and crazy shit going on. He finds out there's basically this different world that he knows nothing about, but he wants to so get into. And it's about kind of like not just having a normal life. This is kind of why I kind of chose this movie. It's what happens in your own town or in your the town that you're from or whatever, the bigger part of it. Because it seems like a big enough town. What was it called? Rock something? Something with boulders or rocks?
Oh, man.
Lodge Town. Sure. It was, something about, Oh, something about with wood. Because I remember they were talking about morning wood or something.
Are you sure you're not confusing Twin Peaks?
No. There's something about wood in this one. I remember. And
lumber mill.
Yeah, lumber mill or something. Anyways, they... yeah, he
Lumberton.
Lumberton, yeah, see? Something about wood.
Yeah.
He doesn't know what to... He doesn't know about this world that's going on in Lumberton, right? There's this other shadier part. He lives in the nice suburban part. His life is very plain, very normal, very paint by numbers. I go to college, I do this, I do that. And the fact that there's all this other stuff going on, and you find out that there's like this other world that lives in the same town that you're from, he kind of gets caught into it. And I fucking... pretty fucking crazy. Obviously, this is David Lynch. If you've ever watched or heard of anything about David Lynch, there is nothing normal about this. Dennis Hopper is out there, to say the least. And it's crazy how watching... this is my second viewing. So it's crazy how the first viewing I saw this was in high school, and I can't appreciate a movie. I could not appreciate a caliber of this movie back in high school. Watching it now... things just clicking, no problem. Check marks, okay, not a problem, okay.
Yeah.
And don't get me wrong, this is 1986. For then times, also, that's crazy. All of the stuff that's going on.
Yeah, you're talking about controversial. If I remember,
very, very controversial.
I hear about it, yeah.
Especially with the abuse, and then liking the abuse, and then
yeah,
it's a very controversial
mainstream kink.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And then you know, just there's a lot of stuff going on in the movie. But overall, I did like it. I wanted to pick something that was dark, but something that was away from the normal suburban life. So I think this does a pretty good job.
Definitely. I mean, the opening alone of this movie tells you exactly what to expect from this movie. From the entirety of this movie. The opening has the quintessential perfect white America. White small town America. And that is... the fucking fire truck, bright red with the fire truck driver waving or whatever.
Yeah, white picket fence.
Right, white picket fence, the red roses.
Yes.
It's perfect. Yeah. The old man watering his lawn in front of a quiet day in the summer.
Yep.
And then he gets the heart attack, and the heart attack immediately
tells us that there's going to be
shows the underbelly of the this darkness that... something good can be always tainted. In this case, it's a heart attack, which is like horrifying, but it is terrible.
Yeah.
And then the dog, that scene with the dog, and then you close in, super Cosmo close in into the ground. You see these beetles, which lets you to think that all this watering is raising these dark beetle entities, biting everything and destroying. You know, it's like the underbelly. It is an underworld. You're going to be shown.
Someone's
as well.
Always feeding from something. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. It could be a lot of things, but the black and whiteness of it is so they coexist in the shot in a way, right? In the scene, and it tells you right away that we're going to take this life, this perfect life in the opening. At the top, and then show you the underbelly as well.
Yeah.
And I like how the movie is very... the movie does a lot of great things. And I love this movie. This is my fifth time easy. And I love it is that it takes a very strict approach to showing everything through Jeffrey's point of view. Uh-huh. If he discovers something, you're discovering something. It sticks very closely
very
to
much
him.
So, yes. It is... your... the mystery... is very much so you're finding out as much as he finds out.
Yeah.
There isn't, you already know the answer and you're just like telling him to try to figure out, you know.
Yeah, exactly. And I almost feel like you could be, I mean, I don't know how it was taken back then compared to now, because a lot of characters and heroes would do different things today if they were written today, but that's not a big departure. I think a lot of the actions he does and all the reasons why he does things are very relatable. Like, I can see a lot of people, a lot of us doing the same thing if we were in his position in a certain way. And
yes and no.
That is to say,
I think there's this big thing about his age specifically.
Oh, no, his age is crucial. I'm talking about his age. Yeah,
yeah, yeah. No. Okay. His age is he still feels immortal. He still feels...
right. He feels...
He's at that cusp of he's about to transition into the fact that real life, there's real life, mm-hmm. and there's consequences to the actions that you do. You're mm-hmm. an adult now. So there's things like right. that. And he hasn't realized this yet. And he's getting to that part. He's still naive. Very much naive.
Yeah.
He sees the he sees the world in a certain way. He doesn't think that there's other things that happen. It's pretty cool to see that experience kind of shift him, change him, for better or worse. Mainly worse, but for better as well. It's growth, something that you needed to happen. It's like a rude awakening.
Yeah, it could be a rude awakening. Also, it could be like a teleportation or like a time traveling of his aging.
Yeah,
Like 100%. He aged 5 years in this month or
easy.
Something.
Yeah, easy.
Or, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like you could say that too, and probably get away with that argument. Yeah, he is. Not only is he young and he feels immortal the way we all did back then, but also he's a very important quality about him is that he is extremely curious, and his curiosity is like all those sayings that go with curiosity is inflicted on Jeffrey.
Yeah.
You know, Curiosity kills the cat, Curiosity kills whatever, if you assume you make that, whatever. All those things,
yeah.
Jeffrey has it. Jeffrey experiences it in the worst ways possible. And I think everything is magnified so completely by the way David Lynch, how he wrote Frank. How he wrote Frank and how Frank is portrayed and the carnage that Frank leaves behind. And the carnage, I don't mean like dead bodies everywhere. It isn't until...
It's more like the mental...
Right, problem. The anguish, yeah. The pain in general. That's the carnage we're talking about. He leaves so much. He leaves such an impression. And I want to talk about Frank as a character as well. But he leaves such an impression on everybody, and it's always negative. It's just variations of negativity. It's a variation of either violence or mental torture or turmoil or disgust or paranoia. He is there when he isn't there. He's there all the time when he isn't there.
Yeah.
We don't see a lot of Dennis Hopper. I'm not saying we don't see any of it. We see plenty of him, but like we don't see a lot of him. He's definitely a supporting character.
Yes.
To Isabella Rossellini, and even Laura Dern has more screen time.
Yes. You're right.
But he's always there.
But the impact that he has in the scenes that he's there clearly impacts our characters in this, which is, what's her name? Dorothy Valance.
Yeah, Dorothy.
Clearly impacts Dorothy and Jeffrey. Yeah. Dorothy more, obviously, but Jeffrey, Dorothy through Jeffrey.
Yeah.
That's just like a bonkers thing going on there.
Yeah. Do you want to separate this in spoilers or no? What do you think about that?
Do we need to? Should we?
Because because it's so old, or
I guess it's culty. It's a culty movie.
I won't put like a different disclaimer to it. I will just say we're gonna be spoiling it from now on.
Okay, yeah, that works out.
I won't put a whole bumper thing like I usually do. I'll just say it now. 10 minutes in, sure. I mean, it's an older movie. You should really see it.
Or at least I've heard about a lot of stuff going on.
Yeah, everyone's heard. Yeah. Right. Some of the my picks are about more recent. So probably separate.
Right. So we obviously know that Frank is mentally disabled, mentally challenged, or mentally something.
Oh yeah, and
there's,
it's funny
there's
how
something going on there, and he's obviously been fed through all of his connections, either family, either friends, either whatever. They just feed the beast.
Yeah,
they placate him. He's like everything. He's like a spoiled kid.
It's a very carnal performance.
Really,
I wouldn't be surprised if two things, if either of these two opposite things were true about this movie, the filmmaking of this movie. Either Dennis Hopper was unleashed to the screen, like, dude, go nuts, you know, like, be the crazy version of yourself you want to be on screen. Say whatever it is to make it be scary. I won't be surprised if they did that. But knowing David Lynch and generally how he works,
yeah.
Is that the opposite is probably true, which is he meticulously wrote this character to say those things and do those things in that specific way, and Dennis Hopper is the best vehicle to show that.
Yeah, that could be.
Because I feel like that first scene... So this movie has so many iconic fucking stuff. I mean, from the ear to the scene I'm about to talk about, which is where he first meets Frank. Or he sees Frank, but Frank doesn't see him in that through the closet. By the way, the closet is like a giant metaphor of like... of his curiosity, voyeurism, and coming to, because at the end, it's perfect for the ending. Yeah. Anyway, he sees them, and like it's a strange or bizarre occurrences. And why do you think the movie goes so, not just dark, but weird? I mean, with the gas mask, with the mommy, with the don't look at me. If they're looking at me, I can kind of get maybe. But there's obviously the mommy and the weird crying he does and the begging, which leads to the violence and the very quick.
There's a lot of going on with Dennis Hopper's character.
Yeah.
With Frank, that I can't even fathom, to be really honest.
I feel like all that are just like amalgamations or the adding of whatever horrible childhood he had. Like...
I mean, yeah, it's just like I feel like
how
he had he's been patched his whole life, like that helps him. So let's just feed him that all the time.
Yeah.
Well, this other thing triggers him, but that other thing helps him. Let's feed him that whenever this happens.
Yeah.
And I just feel like that's been his whole life, and that's all he does because he has those songs like, that trigger him.
Right. The songs that trigger him
either calm him or get him enraged.
Yeah, like the clown, the candy color clown.
Yeah.
Gets him to fight.
Yeah.
That's his violence song. That's his kill song.
Yeah.
And then the Blue Velvet is his fuck song.
Yeah.
You know, it's so weird.
Yeah.
And it's, I guess it's very carnal. Like, it's like when you blow a dog whistle a certain way, it enrages dogs or calms them.
Yes.
Like, he's like that. He's like a feral dog that's also in charge of pointless dangerousness, you know?
Yeah. He's, I mean, you can tell they're a bunch of misfits, mischiefs, thieves, something, gangsters, something.
It's
I don't know.
Beta dogs.
Huh?
They feel like beta dogs.
No. Like just about the group. That's what they are.
Yeah.
But like,
except for maybe the house they go to where they keeps the kid.
Yeah, I don't know what that
is. That guy was strange. That guy felt like just like a partner in crime, kind of. I don't know.
Yeah.
It was a strange guy.
Well,
who first started lip syncing to that song, the color candy colored clown. Also, this I love the choice of music.
But they're obviously all afraid.
Yeah.
Of Frank.
Yeah, they're all afraid of Frank. He goes times 10 to compared to what they do. They're violent too, but he goes extra mile every time.
Yeah.
I think he lives in the extra mile.
Yeah.
Obviously, the question of the week, before I say the other thought, is that what do you think he's inhaling?
To be honest with you, I don't know. I mean,
laughing gas?
I want to say oxygen, but...
It could be oxygen. It does give you a little bit of a high.
I mean, I want to say oxygen as in, like, it almost, like, gives him, like, a quick moment of clarity, a quick like, you know, burst of energy. It does kind of give you this high.
Maybe intensifies the moment he's in.
Maybe, I don't know. It's really weird. I didn't think it was drugs at all. But
well, that's the thing is that you never know. Lynch, right. I'm glad Lynch never answered that. I don't think so anyway.
Yeah, I don't think you need to.
You don't need to. He's also very good about that. He doesn't say anything to anyone. Like, nah, just a movie. Whatever you think is right. he'll never give an answer. Yeah, and so obviously that's the question I first thought when I first saw it. And I think all of that is. Like, imagine, I can only imagine that kind of life Frank must have led to get to the point where the only way he can get off is to do that specific thing. Those specific events. You have to kidnap someone's kid to make them do it. That's the only way for anyone to, like, you know what I'm saying?
Well, I just think he found someone really, really beautiful, and the only way for him to convince somebody is for that way.
It's almost like her song... Gave him the new version of this kink.
Yeah, it was right, like, it was like I fell in love with your song and it turned me on.
Yeah.
You know, and now I need to take advantage.
And just went and took it because he could.
That's what it felt like. Yeah, and then he just doesn't know how to. He didn't know how to do anything else with it. You know.
Yeah.
And he obviously, she had a husband that was long dead.
Yeah, he was dead at the end there.
Yeah.
Yeah, this movie's filled with very creepy stuff. Like, there's this moment that always spooks me. All five times is the scene where at the end where because the thing with this movie is that I always remember the first half a lot more than the second half. The second half I remember well enough. I know what happens, but I always forget the exact moments of like, oh, does he go to the house first or does he go to police? You know, I always forget the order or like, does she forgive him at the end or not? And
right,
she does, but I didn't remember that. You know,
yeah,
and so when he goes back to the place, when he's trying to get the cops there, but he couldn't find the cops because they were in that massive shootout at the other building where he took pictures from, right? And the well-dressed man's coming up the stairs behind the back way, right, to the building. And he looks, Dennis Hopper looks up, and that's when you realize it's Dennis Hopper, who was the well-dressed man, you know, with the fake mustache and the suit. And it just when he looks up, that moment is just so fucking creepy. It always spooks me. And I don't know why. It's like... Just a reaction I always have to it. And there's a lot of very creepy moments that are not quite that level, but like, you know, when he goes into the place to Dorothy's apartment at the end and the brain, like the brain part that's coming out and the tortured guy in the chair, you don't know what happened. I mean,
No.
It's such a strange thing. Like, yes, they got there because they one was kidnapped and the other one deserved it. But, like, I don't know how that happened. How did that happen? How did that guy get his brain in? It's so weird. It almost feels like Frank did it in a burst of anger and went out and then came back. It feels like that.
Yeah.
Anyway, I like how the movie forces you to think and look at images that you can never unsee. And that's what Blue Velvet is. And which is a big part of why Jeffrey has to see those things. He has to write the character like after he, you know, tells the whole truth to the detective, minus the daughter's involvement. After he does that, he has to get the character to go back into the story so he can see those images. Because otherwise, we will never get a resolution to it. Not as an audience, but Jeffrey won't
grow.
It's like he won't be satisfied, but also won't grow.
Curiosity will never be satisfied, and his it's almost like he started something and he needs to see it through.
I'm curious about that. You know how they have that dance, right? They're at that house party dance.
Yes.
And at that point, it feels like some time has passed. Not like a lot of time, but some time. And in that time, he's let go of this mystery, right?
He has, yes.
Right. And do you think at that point he's learned his lesson, has had enough, he doesn't want anymore, and everything that happens after that where Dorothy Valance is at his place and it leads to him shooting Frank?
Yeah, I wanted to think that, but I think it's more of the fact that he just wanted to... I think he wanted to see if he can let go of it. I don't think he was done with it.
Oh, you think so? Okay.
Yeah, it just...
You think if, like, Dorothy Valance never gets there and the cops haven't taken down Booth yet?
I think if he never hooks up with Laura Dern's character, he would go right back to that.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Do you think if like I said, Dorothy Valance never came to his place and forced him back into the world right then, do you think he would have come back anyway?
Yeah,
at some point?
I think he would have wanted to.
Okay. That's interesting. It does help that Jeffrey did put the final period by shooting Frank.
Yeah.
Right?
I just think he would never be able to not drive by somewhere, try to go somewhere that it would remind them of those places or whatever, or if he ever drove by, he would, that would get the better of him, and he would have to go in and see what came of that.
Yeah. Also, this movie thematically is very much about, like, male dominance or the type of males there are. In our culture, maybe in America, you think of Frank as the extreme version of you know, the alpha male masculinity, take over everything kind of thing. And Jeffrey, you know, I'm not saying he's a pushover, closely is, and he's a very nice, wholesome man.
Yes and no, but it's like a man between a beta and an alpha.
Yeah, because he does take advantage of other people along the way, mainly Laura Dern's trust. He gets her to start this thing.
He really does.
He convinces her for his own benefit.
Sandy,
you know, and things like that. Not to mention, he does strangely both provides comfort and takes advantage of Isabella Rossellini's character.
Dorothy. He's almost coerced to.
Well, because of that knife scene, the opening with the when they first meet. I mean,
yes and no.
Well,
no.
I mean, I guess
I mean more that, like she begs him.
Begs him, yeah. Well, that was a strange scene because she has a knife pointed to him, gets him to address, right? And it's almost like, okay, like instant karma, right? He just saw her undressed now. Right?
Yeah, instant karma. But at the same time, she wants to see how it feels to ask to be the one in control.
Right.
And you see that right away because she just got taken advantage of control-wise.
Yes. Well, I think that scene, it says so much more than just like her doing that for that reason. It's also like a testament to how long she's been abused by Frank.
Yes.
Because the fact that it's so ingrained that when she says, like, don't look at me, and then she asks him, do you like me talking that way? And he says no. He's like, how long has it been going on for her to think to ask that question?
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? That's fucked up. Yeah. That's another level of fucked up.
That is another level of fucked up.
That's how long this has been going on.
Right.
You know, it's...
The answer is too long.
Too long. Yes, it is too long. When they're carrying off in the gurney, she's having a whole episode in there.
Oh, 100%.
Yeah.
Complete mental hospital.
How bad should it have been? I mean, clearly the nail in the coffin of her psychosis that led her to go to Jeffrey's apartment at the end in that final act is must have been the fact that what she say that Frank was torturing Don or was killing him? Must have been right in front of her at the apartment, and she must have escaped somehow, right? That's the only thing I can explain that, because she was naked already. She ran to Jeffrey's, right?
Yeah.
So it must have been, it's that same night, right? So
was the same night.
Yeah, they were torturing Don in front of her, probably. She probably got away somehow.
Yeah.
Yeah, same thing.
Don is a husband, right?
Don is a husband. Yeah, with the cut off ear.
She said that they were like mind controlling the son or something like that, right? Or completely
something like that.
She said something about the son where they like the son didn't want him anymore or didn't want her anymore as a mother or something like that.
Oh, I don't remember that.
I think she said that.
Maybe you're
after
right.
After that, where she got to see the son for a little bit.
Yeah,
she was like getting in a fight with the son, and then she mentioned something.
Oh wow. Okay. I guess I missed that part. But yeah, something like that. And yeah, it's so ingrainedly fucked up. But I think he is to.
Okay.
I think he is taking advantage of her.
Who?
Jeffrey to Dorothy.
How so?
Well, I think he's taking advantage of her abuse, the fact that she doesn't have anyone positive in her life. And that's putting it lightly.
Yeah. I would agree with you.
That's putting it nicely.
He does take advantage of the situation.
He comes back. And she asks him, like, why are you back?
Yeah.
You know?
He does take advantage of a situation, and that's just literally just for his curiosity. It's like that's what, because the repeat comes backs is what gets him in trouble.
Yes, he gets cocky.
He gets cocky.
That's part of his immortal thing. I would have, if I got there for the beginning and made it out that first night.
Yeah.
Right. Let's say I would never go back. Why would you risk that again?
Right.
After what you just saw, what Frank did, what these people can do.
Right.
Right. Why would you risk it? But he continues. Obviously, it leads to positive results, and
sort of.
But I mean, what happens to Jeffrey at the end of this movie? What is Jeffrey at the end of the movie? Is he just like his father? And not just to say that he's fine with his place in the world. He's aged those 5 years that we mentioned a second ago. Like, you know. He's calm. Like, is this? Are these good
things? I think there's a. There is a. His youth is dead. That's for sure. Immortality for sure is dead. Because he nearly gets killed.
Yeah.
And that more than once.
Yeah.
And then his perception of the world. His naivete, I guess.
Yeah,
is no longer there. It's like he popped his cherry for the world.
Yeah,
you think college should do that and help you out? You move to a big city and you get numb to the world that not everything is hunky dory all the time, right?
Sure.
But he got that in his own town, in the actual town that he's from. You know. Not the suburban life.
The place he thought he was boring. That was boring.
Exactly.
Although he never actually says it, but I think we see it in his eyes. Sorry, that's just an assumption. I really don't know. But yeah.
Well, you could tell he's so wide-eyed bugged that he like, I found an ear. Wow.
Yeah.
This is gonna be like front page news. There's nothing that happens in this town. I'm surprised we have a detective. You know, and you're like, oh, you find out like all this town's actually shit. Like you find out that there's this, or we're in this part of town that he never knew because he's from the suburbs of it. Like he's never had to deal with that. He's led a whole different life about it, you know.
Yeah.
His suburban life, he thought was so calm and easygoing or whatever the case was. It's like looks really fucking good now after what he had to go. He went through.
Yeah. There's two parts of the ending that I have. Well, one part I have conflicted with. The other part, the very, very ending, I really like. But the ending with Jeffrey and the whole family, which are all very nice and so wholesome, sitting on the couches and their floral pattern curtains. It's just so unbelievably wholesome. And then Laura Dern's character, Sandy, they're all right. They're about to get lunch and they see a robin with a beetle in its beak. Which seems to me like a clear indication of good triumphing over evil, based on that opening.
Yeah. Stuff. So when I saw that, I was like, "Why are they so happy?"
Yeah.
They're like, oh.
It's almost delirious.
It's all very, very much so. And I was like, they're so happy as in like, that's the circle of life kind of thing. But that's the thing. We look at it and I was like, what? Oh, you guys are very, very like.
I don't.
This kind of gruesome-ish act of another creature killing another creature.
Yeah.
Like, even if you consider it, it is an insect and a bird, but this is two animals, technically, or two, whatever.
Right.
Life beings.
Right, they're part of life.
Yeah.
Yeah. Many ways you can read that. Anyway, I've got a little conflict with that, because if people can take that as a face value thing, I think it diminishes a lot of what Jeffrey is responsible for in this movie, which is a lot of bad, too. I mean, he made it out, which he didn't deserve to die, I'm not saying that, and he managed to help save Dorothy. Which leads me to the very end of the movie, because the movie doesn't end there. It ends with the kid with Dorothy. Seems like she got over, at least for the most part, enough to be a mother to his kid. And her song replaces the opening song of that wholesomeness with Blue Velvet. And her singing it, the last line in Blue Velvet.
Yeah.
And I think that's a perfect thing, because the movie, I think makes you believe, or it tells you that this movie was about saving Dorothy Valance. Sounds like a little hetero masculine thing, but it's basically what it is. It's like Dorothy being saved and getting out of there intact, I guess. Because I think that holding her off as the very ending and not the Robin with Jeffrey and Sandy says something about where maybe the movie's like motivations are at. And I just like, that's why I like that very ending. But I don't really know for sure. It's just speculation. But what do you think about that? What do you think of that?
To be honest with you, I didn't really put that much together into it, because that's like a very insignificant thing for me on my second view,
because
I'm caught with everything else. Definitely on my first view, I was just like, what the fuck's going on here?
So, fuck?
Random intro. And just like, this is almost like my first view, if you think about it.
Yeah, man. High school doesn't even count.
Yeah.
A lot of movies from my high school years, like, I don't even count. You know, so I've seen a lot of movies that I'm like, I don't even know if I believe what I like about this movie right now.
Right.
Yeah. Here we go. Anything else you want to say on Blue Velvet?
No, I can't.
Anything we didn't finish? I feel like we said a lot of things. Did we finish what we thought? I think we did, right?
I think we did.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, cool.
Mommy. Oh, mommy, mommy, mommy,
mommy loves you.
Baby wants to fuck. Get ready to fuck. You fuckers, fucker. You fucker. Don't you fucking look at me! Baby, what's Blue Velvet?
Okay, cool. So that is it for Blue Velvet. I hope you enjoy the first iteration of our new marathon, which I was coming up with titles. Kind of hard to come up with titles, but right now I'm at Streets and Cul-de-Sac. But that's all I have right now. I don't know what to call this marathon, but we gotta name it something though. So anyway, that is it for our show. You have been listening to Another Movie Podcast. You can always reach us at podmoviecast@gmail.com if you want to send us feedback to what we're talking about here and what we will be doing in the future. You can also check out our website, otherpodcast.com, for all this stuff and everything we'll see. For me personally, though, you can follow me on Twitter at Armin Filmmaker, which is filmmaker with A-R-M-E-N. Ralph?
You could follow me on Twitter at Gamer Ralph. That is with two R's and an F.
Next time, we'll be doing my number one of this marathon, which is the First City movie, and it's going to be The 25th Hour.
Okay.
Which is a Spike Lee movie from 2001, 2002, I think it came
out. With Ed Norton, right?
Edward Norton, yes. That's going to be the marathon pick. The other two picks are going to be this one might not happen. It's at the music box right now. Since we have some time, Ralph, I'm hoping we can catch it. Mm. It's Christian Pencils. Oh, I can't say his fucking name. The guy who did Phoenix has a new movie called Transit. And we have a small window of time to maybe catch it. So I'm kind of hoping we're going to watch that movie.
Okay.
Which you can find at your local Art House Theater if you're looking for it. It might be out for rental by then. You never know. Some of these movies come out pretty fast. And the one we're going to be watching, the bigger tentpole release, is going to be Pet Sematary, not Shazam.
Wow.
Pet Sematary. I was looking at it. I'm like, oh, I could do both of those. Like, no, wait. I don't want to see Shazam. So anyway, Pet Sematary, we're going to be reviewing.
Who says you only watch horror movies in October?
Yeah, right? Anyway, until then, guys, I'm Oscar.
He's Oscar.
He's right. He's right. Later.
Yeah.
Coffee and pie.
Coffee and pie? Oh, my.
You didn't hear it from me.